This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to Referee's World. It's the monthly audio magazine for referees of all levels all over the world. To date, we're delighted that we now have regular listeners in 66 countries, which is brilliant. So thank you very much for your continued support. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a Level 5 referee affiliated with the Somerset FA, and my colleague and mentor is PGMLO Assessor and County Training Officer for the Somerset FA, Richard Mellon, who we'll catch up with in just a sec. In this episode, we talk about the Respect Programme in great detail, starting off with a chat that I had with Rachel and Brendan, who run the Respect Programme in my county FA. Now, this was a phone call made back in November of 2011, and we started it all by talking about how it all began.
This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Yeah, so it started up 3 years ago, and some of the things it looked to achieve was increased numbers of referees on match days, reduce the assaults on referees, to improve the on-field behaviour of players, managers and coaches, and to also change the behaviour of spectators in youth football as well. So that's some of the things that it's looking to achieve. In terms of what we're doing at a county level, we kind of work with our local leagues for them to actually implement the Respect programme and carry out some of the actual items of respect, whether it be respect barriers on match days, code of conduct for players, spectators and coaches, and things like that, really.
Have you noticed a marked improvement since the Respect campaign came out?
In terms of yellow cards, red cards, the misconducts, they are down and have been down season on season. So that's kind of that's good for us to know. So in terms of that aspect, yes, it is.
Okay, Rachel, tell me about how many Respect leagues there are nationally.
Nationally, there are 850 Respect leagues. So it's a good number because I think in total, there's about 1,200. So, you know, we're going in the right direction across the country, and certainly from a Somerset point of view, we've got 24 out of our 29 leagues. So we've only got a few more leagues to get to sign up, which is really positive.
Has this process been a lot quicker or a lot slower than you'd originally planned and thought about?
Probably a bit of both, really. I think certainly when Brendan and I took over in the last couple of seasons, it's really taken off in the sense that we've got hold of the leagues, we've spoken to them, we've visited every league in Somerset and tried to get as many as we can to sign up. I think in Somerset in particular, we've had a really good response from our leagues. I think it's a very positive approach to Respect. So it's just that administrative part of actually setting it up and getting the clubs to adopt it on a match day, really.
On a national level, have any of your colleagues at different at any other county FAs experienced any problems? You were saying just then that in Somerset, obviously myself and Richard, we're affiliated with the Somerset FA, but yeah. Across the country, is there anywhere that perhaps it hasn't gone down so well?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, we meet nationally twice a year with Dermot Collins up at the FA, and he gives us a broad overview of nationally what's happening up there. And although there's obviously kind of some running themes where we've got leagues that are signed up across the country that maybe aren't implementing it as strongly as they could do, that's probably the most common theme across the country. And sometimes we find that in Somerset as well, and that's something that we're working with leagues to ensure that we're implementing it as much as possible. But I think, as a whole, leagues across the country are very receptive to the programme and understand what we're trying to achieve, and that we're just basically just trying to improve football for everyone involved, which is what basically it comes down to, I think.
Brendan, tell me about the feedback that's been received from the grassroots survey that we all took across the country. How do you feel that it's benefited the Respect programme?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously, it's a grassroots survey that's done each season. One of the main kind of topics from that grassroots survey was the Respect programme in the county is definitely something that's kind of well thought of by the grassroots coaches, players and things like that. And in terms of a national point of view as well, it's also recognised in the top three priorities as well, identified by people in football. It's something that's very important to the game in terms of just raising the actual general behaviour and conduct on match days, and also helps with referees in terms of, creating them a better environment to actually officiate in.
Do you think overall, because of the way the Respect programme is working, it's helping to encourage a lot more youngsters to come up through the ranks?
I think so, yeah. It's a better environment for people to referee in. You know, some of the aspects of Respect help that. You know, the barriers in terms of keeping the spectators back, the actual relationship between a referee and captains on match days, and working with the actual captains in terms of behaviour of the teams that they're officiating with as well. So definitely, I think it's a better environment than, you know, it was maybe a few years ago.
Rachel, on a local level, how is the Respect programme supported? Obviously, you guys do a really good job. But tell us a bit about what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, what we've done is, obviously, we've got 24 four leagues signed up to Respect, but what we've decided to do this season as a pilot is we've identified six of our adult leagues, and with them, we're working very closely in terms of supporting them to identify a Respect coordinator within that league, so a person that can be our first point of contact, who we will have regular monthly contact with. We're working very closely with our governance team at the office, and they will put together a report of weekly matches, so looking at misconducts, yellow cards, red cards, etc., that's been built up over games. She'll give us a report on those six identified leagues, and then we can contact them. The idea is that, obviously, you know, within leagues, there's going to be clubs that maybe get themselves into a little bit of trouble, and we just want to help them to support those clubs before it escalates into anything too severe. So that's what we're working with for six of our identified leagues, and that's just a pilot for us for this season. And if we can, and if it works well, which it is so far, you know, that we'll open it up to the remainder of our Respect leagues.
Do you think that punishing a club in a severe way benefits all round, or do you think it's better to maybe take a more mild approach?
It's a difficult one. I think nationally, you know, they encourage us to name and shame with those clubs that are continually misbehaving. Obviously, for clubs that, you know, put a foot wrong here and there, you know, what we want to do is we don't want to come down hard. The important thing for us at Somerset is to ensure leagues have ownership of the clubs within their league. I don't think it would be helpful if we kind of came down and started stamping our authority on any of the leagues and the clubs, because that's just not sustainable. And, you know, the leagues want to take that ownership, and we want to support them to work with the clubs rather than take a kind of a hard hand approach, just to work with those clubs and help those clubs with anything that's too severe before it escalates, basically. So we want to take an approach where we're working with them and supporting them, rather than kind of pointing our finger and saying that's wrong, you know, and the worst case scenario is we don't want that club to play within that league, for example.
Okay, moving on now. On a professional level, tell us about Get On With The Game.
Okay, Get On With The Game is the professional games version of the Respect programme. So Brendan and I often get asked when we're out meeting with leagues and clubs, you know, you see what happens on a Saturday in the Premier League. Players are misbehaving, managers are misbehaving, clubs aren't particularly promoting Respect. You know, what do you expect us to do then at a grassroots level? So basically what the FA have done, they're working with the professional game, and they've got the Get On With Your Game scheme going, which basically was launched on the 13th of August of this year. And it's basically the professionals' Respect programme. So they will support managers, players, coaches, clubs to take much more of a respectful approach to the game, making them aware that obviously they are role models, and obviously that impacts on people that are watching the game. So it's just showing them that they've got a responsibility to act in a professional way when they play on a Saturday and a Sunday.
And what's the feedback for this been like? Because you do get, there are some managers out there on a professional level, the one that comes straight to mind, and he's not quiet about his love or hatred for referees, is Neil Warnock.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is different.
If I'm allowed to mention that, but...
I think there is a difference, obviously, between grassroots football and the professional game, because, you know, ultimately it's a business and it's results driven, and so tempers flare, you know, it really matters to them what happens on for that result. So some people get carried away and say things that you know, they shouldn't. And I think Get On With The Game is an approach from the Premier League to stop those managers or make them more aware of you know, what they say does make such a huge impact, and it impacts on people that they wouldn't even know it impacts, down to the point where they, you know, you get managers of an under-11s watching, you know, for example, Neil Warnock going crazy at the official on a Saturday, and he thinks, actually, that's, you know, he's done it and I'm upset with the decision, I'll do it. Where really, you know, we need to stop that. And the more impact we can have on the professional game, I think it will certainly filter down into grassroots, because that's basically who we watch.
Back to you, Brendan. The Respect Awards, which is going to be happening at the FA Cup final. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so basically, each season there is national awards that leagues and clubs and individuals can actually nominate themselves for. Those nomination forms come out, to be February next year. It then goes to a panel at the FA. That panel then decides an overall winner for the country, and the actual prize is usually a cash prize, and the actual trophy is presented to the individual, the club or the league at Wembley, the FA Cup final. Last year it was by David Cameron, and the year before it was Prince William.
So it's quite an incentive for all the clubs to actually take on board details about the Respect programme and really make it work for themselves, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously it exists to kind of support football, support referees, clubs, coaches and things like that as well. You know, and they also recognise good practice as well that clubs, leagues and people do on a regular basis throughout the season.
Rachel, just very quickly then, before we wrap up, tell me about Respect FC and what it's about.
OK, Respect FC is a national initiative from the FA. It was launched back in January of this year. Respect FC is one club, one community. So basically, there's a website called www.respectfootballclub.com. You can go on there and you can sign up to it to say, yes, you believe in Respect. You understand the ethos and what it's trying to achieve. And it's a club where referees, coaches, players, everyone can sign up to. It's not associated to any other football club. It is its own entity. And it's just to show that there's a unified approach to respect across the country. That we've got ambassadors on there such as Robbie Savage. He's an ambassador for Respect FC. So he goes around and he talks about it and he tries to get more people involved in the Respect programme.
That's in between doing dancing, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'd like to see in 5 to 10 years' time, in an ideal world, we would like to see the Respect programme in Somerset, having covered every single league. So we've got all leagues signed up to it. We've got all players, coaches, spectators adhering to the ethos of Respect, and just making it a much more enjoyable game for everyone involved. Nationally, again, there's more of a tie-in between the professional game and our grassroots game, so that when we watch on a Saturday, you know, we're not looking at it and thinking, oh goodness, you know, we're going to get queries on this when we come to work on a Monday about decisions that have been made and challenged and how players have behaved, etc. But also, I think something that we're, as Brendan mentioned about Sheffield Valley winning an educational award for Respect, I think Respect in education is a huge market, in the sense of, you know, you've got such a captive audience and those young people at school, and they play football at school. They, you know, they go from school, they play football in clubs. And I think for us, in the next sort of 5 years, in the immediate future, we'll be looking to support more and more schools to be involved in Respect, and how we can build bridges between Respect in schools and Respect on the pitch.
This is the Referees World Podcast.
It's the Referees World Podcast. And don't forget, you can listen through iTunes on your iPad or iPod by searching for Referees World. Or you can contact us and listen online via the website, refereesworld.co.uk. Follow us on Twitter at Referees World, and like us on Facebook by searching for the Referees World Podcast. Right, don't forget, if you have anything that you'd like a little plug for coming up over the next few months, please get in touch, let us know, either on Facebook or Twitter. Can we mention that Yeovil RA, they've got their open meetings on the 5th of March with Janie Frampton, who we spoke to on this programme a year ago. And if you haven't yet heard the podcast, you can download it and listen. She's the National Referee Manager. All welcome, please spread the word. Listen, good luck, guys. Thanks very much for the follow on Twitter. Please say hello to Nando, who's tweeted he would like us to do a circumvention of the passback law. Say hello to Joe Zalewski, who's just qualified and become a level 8. Welcome to the family, mate. Welcome to the family. And say hello to Johnny Ref, who's also recently started listening. Thanks very much for the comments about the podcast, Johnny. Keep us in touch with how your refereeing career is going. I've got to say a big thank you as well to Sussex County FA, who are very positive in retweeting everything that we post on Twitter and Facebook. And they do spread the word about the podcast. So, guys, thank you very much for your support. And indeed, if you have anything coming up that you'd like us to mention, do get in touch.
From grassroots to the World Cup.
This is the Referees World Podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellin.
Right, let's continue our discussion now about the Respect Programme with Rich, who's got a bit of a tan and a few white bits. How's it all going, mate? How was the golf?
My golf's okay. It's not. It's
this
not
is
the
why
best.
There's been a delay in the podcast because Rich has been out playing golf in Spain.
Yeah, I went to southern Spain, had 4-day break out there.
Funny who you bump into on these short breaks.
It was. Bumped into our Scottish colleagues. The Scottish group of national referees were out there, and one chap I actually went to when I went to Dallas last year, I met him again. So you know, you meet friends and colleagues. Steve McLean, hello Steve.
Hello Steve.
Yeah, hello Steve. Steve McLean was out there, and now I know that Steve is part of a team of six that's out on Champions League duty this week.
Mm. Rich, I think it's fair that we start with the Respect campaign.
Okay, slight correction. Respect Programme.
Respect Programme,
it started off as a campaign, yeah. But they changed the description. It's now the Respect Programme. There have been some high-level cases, and everybody knows who they are. It's the Patrice Evra and Suarez incident, and there's also the John Terry and the Anton Ferdinand incident. Now, they're high-profile cases, and whilst I'm certainly not going to sort of encourage any conversation about the intricacies of it and the charges that are being applied, I still think there's a need to sort of reiterate and reintroduce the morals of what the Respect Programme is about. And to be perfectly honest, I see some successes in it. Not total successes, and we never expected an overnight change, but there are successes within this Respect Programme, and I think it should continue.
On the whole, would you say it is working?
Yes, I do. I do think that. I mean, before...
And we must also remember that the media will always highlight negative news.
Because it makes headlines.
And sells newspapers.
Exactly, and that's their business, you know. So let's try and set that aside and focus on what the Respect Programme here... the standards are of this Respect Programme. So let's go back 5 or 6, 7 years now. Did players shake hands before a game of football?
No.
No. When did they shake hands? Did they even shake hands in some cases? So what the Respect Programme...
Maybe at the end of a game, as you do. Just
yeah, maybe. But
in the way that players will come up to you as a referee just to say, thanks, ref.
Yeah, it is that. But you didn't get 22 players coming up at the end of the game exchanging handshakes between both sides and shaking hands with the match official. So, you know, the Respect Programme has brought in an element of quality that was unknown before. So I just think that the handshake before the game, I would pose the question as a tease, is it necessary? Is it a charade, or does it have some merit in what it represents? But in terms of the racist side of it, I find that totally unacceptable. And let's just talk briefly about the Patrice Evra and Luis Suarez handshake with the recent game between Man United and Liverpool. I just totally disagree with what Suarez was doing.
I absolutely agree with you.
And I think he's shown Liverpool Football Club up in the wrong light. You know, those people up at Liverpool, they have a fantastic club up there. I'm not a Liverpool fan, so, you know, I hope people don't think that I'm blowing the trumpet for Liverpool FC.
Aldershot all the way.
Yeah, I'm an Aldershot boy, yeah. But, you know, Liverpool Football Club have got a fantastic history. They're a fantastic club. They've got wonderful players and a great history. So full respect to that. But I just think Luis Suarez let the club down. Let the club down in a major way and took a personal issue out there, which he should not have done. You know,
they could have swept a lot of this under the table very easily had he done that handshake, and it would have moved on, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Why do you shake a person's hand?
Well, you shake it because it's a... I don't know. Why do you shake a person's hand?
Okay, a handshake. It's a greeting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah.
You don't have to do any more than that, and you don't have to use words to make a handshake. You know, the handshake is in a professional sense is just a greeting, and you know, you don't have to say anything. Why did the handshake not happen? Because two places further down the line, Rio Ferdinand saw what happened
and he
said,
didn't do it.
I'm not going to shake your hand if you don't shake my colleague's hand.
Yeah.
And arguably, you could understand why Rio Ferdinand didn't want to shake Suarez's hand.
Yeah.
So all I say is, look at the value of what the handshake represents. It's a greeting, you know, and it starts off, you know, how are you? Good to see you type of thing. And the greeting goes on to a conversation, perhaps, in theory. But if I change the idea of the handshake around a little bit, thinking about rugby, what do they do at the end of a game, the rugby players?
They all form a line, don't they? And they clap off the...
From top to bottom in rugby, they actually stand there and like almost a guard of honour, and they clap their opponents off, and they each team does it to the opposition.
And you tend to find as well at grassroots level, particularly in a cup game, the lower league teams, they tend to sort of wish three cheers for the winning team, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the handshake in a way is a sign of respect, and the three cheers for the dog and duck. Yeah, three cheers for the dog and duck. You know, that type of thing. So, you know, does the handshake have to be at the beginning of the game? I think it could be, and I think it should stay there.
Is there an argument here to maybe introduce rugby-style rules into the game of football? Because rugby, everybody knows, is a gentleman's game. The referee gets utmost respect. I mean, imagine how the game of football would be different if referees for football games had the same level of respect.
Careful, Darren, you're getting me on a hobby horse here. Rugby has changed, in my view. Yeah. This is my personal view. Rugby has changed in the last 5 years, I think it is, since significant money was introduced. Mm. The players at the pro level are now playing with a significant purpose, not just the winning, but also the financial rewards for winning. So money has changed the attitude, and I've seen a lot more questioning of rugby referees' decisions. The gum shield doesn't hide everything. And if you look closely, players are questioning the rugby referees' decision making. So it's not as clean as what it previously was, but it's still clean nonetheless. Yeah. So do we want to take anything from the rugby side of things? Where are you going to go with this conversation?
On the Facebook page, which, by the way, if you haven't found us yet, you can like us on Facebook. Just search for Referees World Podcast. We posted a survey, a quick question. It's always great to get fellow referees' opinions on this. Is it time football followed rugby's lead by introducing a sin bin system to penalise players without dismissing them? That's kind of the area I was looking at. The results of which, interestingly, 83% of people said no.
Welcome, colleagues. 83%.
So
I think if I'd voted on it, I would be in that 83%. Mm.
And if you were going to go down the sin bin route, what would you sin bin people for?
Yeah, okay.
Are we going back to flopping here?
We'll come to flopping in a while. But let's look at the laws of the game as they're set. When using the respect programme, the respect programme has introduced a little bit more skill requirement from referees.
Explain a bit more.
Okay.
For those
within the respect programme, we're using the captains. Yeah. Okay. We are openly going to admonish players when we think it's necessary. We then have the stepped approach, using the captain after first admonishment. The captain might be called in for a second admonishment before finally the player gets a sanction. So consequently, do we actually need a sin bin? My view is no. Currently, no. But I'm open to persuasion if someone's got a good idea and a good reason for it. The laws of the game at the moment say that if a player, and let's use caution for dissent, if he shows dissent by word or action, he shall be cautioned. But let's go back to the respect programme. How will you communicate? How will you make yourself approachable and assert your control within a game of football? There's no point in knowing the 17 laws of the game if you haven't got no management skills. Mm. So, using the management of the respect programme, that's where your game skills begin. So, you have a stepped approach through admonishment, through using the captain, or straight into yellow card for dissent by word or action. That's just a simple example of how I think it actually is. But personally, I don't think we actually need a sin bin. Do you think we do?
I've got mixed reviews on it. I quite like the idea of a sin bin because there are certain things where a caution is possibly a bit harsh. Let's say, for example, goal celebration, take the shirt off.
OK, I understand where you're coming from.
Just an example.
You've said he's committed a reckless challenge and been cautioned.
Yeah.
He then removes his jersey for technical breach of law.
Yeah.
Yeah? So let's change it around slightly. We'll take out the removal of the jersey, but he's being cautioned first time for dissent. Okay. Dissent by action, and he threw the ball on the ground. Can you manage it, or do you go straight and caution? What's the level of tolerance by a referee before he decides to caution on a technical offence? Does it have to be a caution? Can he set it up? Can he use his management skills? Can he communicate with the player? Could he use the captain before he decides to caution for a technical offence? Let's see how far you get pushed as a referee before you break and say, I'm not accepting that. I'm straight in and I'll have a caution. Are you a referee that has got a high tolerance, or are you a referee that's got a low tolerance? Ideally, a referee that's got somewhere in between.
An adjustable tolerance, because every game is different.
Absolutely.
So you have to go in with that tolerance level. Look, if you're going into a big derby game where there's a lot of history and you're aware that there has been problems before, then the chances are your tolerance level is not going to be the same as it would be if you're going into a lesser game.
Of course. I mean, sometimes I look at technical offences, and it's not necessarily what is said, but how it's said. You know,
the aggressive approach.
Yeah, it is. It's the aggressive action of players. Do they come running at you from 20 yards and screaming and shouting at you? That's the easy stuff in which to deal with, as opposed to the guy that just turns around and says, referee, that was a joke.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people that have a low tolerance and don't accept that. And I'm not asking you to change, but I'm asking you to think how your game can improve. And I say your game can improve if you look at your skill factor. It's not about knowing the 17 laws of the game. Those are crucial that you do know the 17 laws, but your skill factor has got to come in to your game plan. And it's not just about saying, well, he did this and that's a yellow card. He did that and that's a red card. It's not as simple as that. It's not black and white. A lot of grey areas.
It's the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellin. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. You can contact us via Twitter. And indeed, many of you are doing so. Thanks very much for any new listeners which have decided to follow. As I've already mentioned, you can find us and like us on Facebook. Just look for Referees World podcast, or you can go to the website refereesworld.co.uk. Now, in terms of listening, you can listen through the website or you can listen on iTunes. Just subscribe to Referees World. And then once we have a new episode coming out, iTunes will let you know and you can download it straight to your iPhone, to your iPad, or to your iTunes. Simple. Now, we're talking respect at the moment. Again, there's a whole cauldron of things we could go into here. Where do you see the respect programme going over the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I certainly think that we need to just reinforce the principles of what the respect programme represents. I certainly don't think we need to make any actual changes to it. But if the Football Association bring in changes, then I think, you know, those people that are introducing it have got a real reason to it. And I don't see a problem if that's going to be. But at the moment, it's a continuation of what we have. We have to re-establish it. We have to refresh it, I think, is the modern word, isn't it?
Yeah.
In IT terms, let's refresh it. Let's re-establish and what it stands for. So I don't see many changes, but a continuation.
Do you think flopping would ever make the respect?
Okay, you want to know about flopping.
Let's get on with the flopping.
Okay, flopping. I was watching a British Basketball National League match the other week between Plymouth and Glasgow. I heard the commentator say, oh, he's been warned for flopping. And I thought, hello, what's that? So I rewound on my TV what actually happened and what led up to the comment of flopping. Flopping in basketball terms is the equivalent of simulation in football. A player who is guilty of simulation is cautioned in football, but in basketball, the player was warned for flopping.
And that's a recognised law within the laws of the game.
That is exactly what the commentator said on basketball.
Simulation, that's another one potential for a sin bin.
Okay.
Are we opening up more worms here?
I could run with that idea, yeah. Darren. I could run with that. So there's someone that's trying to persuade me already, because, as I said, I wasn't in favour of the sin bin. Unless someone can persuade me that we need it, maybe, just maybe, the idea of a sin bin for someone who's guilty of obvious simulation, that could be the answer to it, rather than a caution.
Thanks very much for listening. If you're a new listener, I hope you're enjoying what you hear. If you've got any feedback or any comments or any questions for either of us, then please feel free to drop us a line through the website. So let's move on then. We've done an awful lot about respect, and we could talk about the respect programme for hours. in a way, what we're going to talk about next kind of fits under that bracket. And that's some of the challenges as to whether or not they should or shouldn't be an instant red card. So let's talk about the three high profile instances here involving Vincent Kompany, Balotelli and Glenn Johnson. Rich, I'll hand this one over to you.
Oh, thanks, Darren. Let's just look at this because the referees involved are professional referees. The players involved are professional players. Each has a responsibility to protect the image of the game. Now, every referee has that same responsibility about protecting the image of the game. But we all have an interpretation in which to follow, and there is an expectation of spectators and players of which we fall into that understanding. Balotelli. Now, he, in slow motion, it's easily detectable. Mm. But the referee has got no chance. He doesn't see it in slow motion. He's too close to the incident and didn't pick it up.
This is the incident where he... It was Howard Webb, where he stamped on...
Scott Parker. Did the motion of the player carry him over the top, and did he stamp? I think he did. And it was called as correct in the DVD replay or the TV replay. Unfortunately, Howard Webb wasn't in the best position, too close, had his back almost to it, and didn't see what had happened. So consequently, he was trialled under the PGMO, the Professional Game Review System. Now, grassroots, we don't have that facility. So how do we get around it? If you see it, you might be able to deal with it. But you've got to know what you see. So how do you make sure you see it?
Well, I think you have to be extra vigilant at that level. And you, in a way, when you talk to your assistants, particularly with club assistants, you're kind of asking for a bit of honesty out of them, really, aren't you? Ooh,
wow. Oh, no. Wow. Okay, you've opened a real can of worms, Dad. Now, you as a referee... want total honesty from a club assistant referee.
It's not going to happen. I know it's not going to happen.
Ah, right, OK, you've already answered my question. Yeah. So, OK, let's go a little bit further then. If you ask the assistant referee, behind my back, if you see serious foul play, I need to know. Serious foul play or violent conduct, you let me know and I'll take the action. What if he comes back to you with serious foul play or an act of violent conduct by an opponent on one of his players? How do you deal with that?
I can only deal with what I see, which is what I would explain to them at the time. Now, I will know that something's happened, so I can only deal with what I see at the time. Okay. Now, if something's gone on behind my back for whatever reason, and I haven't seen it, yet a load of other people are starting to kick off, I would have to deal with what I see at that point. Mm. Now, yeah, as the referee, I'm going to get a load of abuse by saying, well, you didn't see that because matey stamped on matey's head. I can't give that call. I can't do anything about that.
There are two ways you can take this. You can either give responsibility to the assistant referee, club assistant referee, and say, look, if you see violent conduct behind my back, a serious foul play, no, it can't be serious foul play behind your back. Surely you must be watching the game with the ball involved, that serious foul play. But if there's violent conduct behind your back by a player and you take the word of the assistant referee because you've given that responsibility, you have the responsibility and the obligation to follow that through with the appropriate sanction. If the player is allowed to appeal for mistaken identity, I didn't do it, and he wants to go through that process, let him do it. But if you accept the give the responsibility to the club assistant, then follow it up and don't go short.
What would you do if your club assistant referee is not the most honest of people and his team is 3-4-0 down and he's now starting to give a lip back to some of the players that have given him some jip and he makes up a lot, something happens, but he just makes something up?
You've got to stop him. You've got to make an example. I'm not saying an example has got to be remove him and don't let him run the line, but you've got to stop the cancerous effect that he might have on the game. Because if he has an influence on the players through his inability to understand and over-involvement, then he will have a disruptive influence on the game and you need to stop him. And that may fall into one or two methods of doing it. Either go across, stop the game and say, hey, this is not acceptable, or you might have to go across and take the flag away from him and ask him to leave the vicinity of the field of play. You've got to protect the players. You've got to protect the image of the game.
OK, going back to the challenges that we were originally talking about,
yeah.
It's so easy to get sidetracked on this show.
It is. Very easy. Very,
because
very
there's
easy.
Like a can of worms being opened every time we say something.
Well, you open the can
of
worms.
Yeah, it's me.
Right?
I know it is.
I'm just picking the worms out. And sort of, but let's go back to whose challenge challenge was it? Vincent Kompany.
Vincent Kompany.
Vincent
yeah.
Kompany. I think it was 9 minutes. Manchester United versus Manchester City.
That was it.
Was it FA Cup?
It
FA
was...
Cup. I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. United went on to win. And was it Chris Foy?
Chris Foy was the referee, yeah, yeah, colleague Chris Foy. I just ask everybody listening, think of the criteria for a challenge involving excessive force. Think about the criteria for excessive force challenge. Dad, do you want to chuck anything at me at the moment? No, don't do that.
On that particular challenge, the 3 second delay was that thinking time that he had.
Absolutely.
That was the longest thinking time ever. And as soon as I saw that challenge, my response was, that's a red card. And then there was a 3 second delay, and I thought, he's not going to do anything about it. And then the card came out.
What I can relate to in terms of how Chris went about his duty on that day is he knows what he saw. He took a photograph in his mind of what he saw, and he ran it through his mind two or three times to say, I know what I saw. Did I see it? What did I see? I saw a reckless challenge, two-footed, uncontrolled body language, no control of his body, and made a two-footed challenge. The opponent took evasive action to avoid heavy contact, excessive force challenge. So the components were there. He just had to make sure he got the decision right. And that's why the 3 seconds is being talked about. And that's what Chris did. And that's what we all should be doing as referees, taking a snapshot of what you see, and your thought process should be saying, foul, no foul, foul, free kick, foul, caution, foul, dismissal. You know, the process of what you see, and put together the picture of the criteria for judging free kicks. It's either careless, it's reckless, or with excessive force.
In a situation like that, if it was me, the way I would look at it, and this is how I explain it to the players afterwards, is if he had made contact with him, he would have seriously injured him. So for me, that warrants the right decision to give a red card.
That's a fair comment to say.
So that would help me make that decision in that particular circumstance.
Okay. But what I want to say to you, does the player have to make heavy contact with excessive force to be sent off?
No, not at all.
Okay.
And this is what a lot of the players don't understand. You know, in times where I've had to do a sanction of a similar nature, you know, you get surrounded by a few players saying, but ref, I didn't touch him. It's not the fact that he didn't touch him. It's what could have happened. It was the reckless force in which he went about the challenge.
OK. Two parts of the criteria that I want to highlight to our colleagues listening is the fact that the challenge was two-footed. He had no control and he endangered the safety of the opponent, despite the fact that he never made contact with him. I would just add at this moment, imagine if that challenge had been between Roy Keane and Patrick Vieira. Imagine that.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, the sparks would have been fine. However, let's get back onto track here. So the point is here, Chris Foy made his decision based upon, did he have control of his own body movement? He was two-footed, off the ground.
Studs showing.
And if he'd caught the player, he'd have chopped him in half.
So it was Nani, wasn't it?
Yes, it
was. And Nani's quite a small player. So
yes,
he
is, yeah.
That was a career. That was a career breaker, that was.
Oh, yeah. And he took evasive action to avoid the heavy contact. Mm. So although he never made the contact, Vincent Kompany definitely endangered the safety of the opponent. Now, let's change this a little bit and bring it back down to grassroots where we commonly referee. Could you apply the same sanction, Darren?
Could I? I have applied that same sanction. I went to watch, shortly after this happened, me and a fellow colleague went to watch a local league game, and there was a challenge pretty much identical to that. But what was quite interesting was the response of the players and the people around the pitch. Nobody made any reference to this at all. And I instantly turned to my mate Brian and said, look, he's got to go, as you do. And we talked about this, but in that situation, no. Guilty or not guilty, I have dismissed players for that same challenge.
Okay, no problem with that. It's being able to sell the decision, because there is an expectation that players at some levels will be allowed to make that type of challenge. But what you've got to do is you've got to try and stem that type of challenge from the game. And if I just relate back to my playing days, that type of challenge that Vincent Kompany made was my forte. I was quite adept at making that type of challenge. Not in an uncontrolled way, but I was semi under control because I knew what I was doing. I knew how I wanted to get the ball. I was regarded what I would say as a ball winner. other people would say I was a dirty player. You know, but you know, that's by the by. Thanks, brilliant. Thanks, friends.
Yeah.
But no, my point here is, as a player of 20 years ago, if I was playing today, I have to adjust to the rules of the game. The rules of the game will control me, but I have to work within those rules of the game. And if I made that challenge that I made 20 years ago, like Vincent Kompany did, I would expect to be sent off. So I've got to change. And how do we impose what we see at senior level, and this is a Premiership FA, senior FA Cup level, down at grassroots? We have some selling to do here, and it's very, very difficult to sell. So we've got to be assured of what we see and know how to deal with it.
Do you think these high-profile instances have made it easier for referees to sell those decisions at grassroots level? Because the players are now more aware.
Yeah, I do. I do think that's possible. That's a good point, Dara. What we see at Premiership level is possible to follow, but in some cases, we need to be a little bit more careful as regards what players expect. That type of challenge by Vincent Kompany, I think everybody's expecting a dismissal because they know the standards. Mm. Let's go to another challenge that happened within days of the Manchester United game. The Glenn Johnson challenge. Now, unfortunately, our colleague, I think it was Lee Mason on the day, didn't have the best of angles to make the judgment. But the TV said, wow, that's a hideous challenge. That's similar to Vincent Kompany, if it's not worse than Vincent Kompany's challenge. But it didn't get a sanction. Now, since the games have been played, it's been declared that the Vincent Kompany challenge is not acceptable. Unfortunately, the Glenn Johnson challenge equally is not acceptable, but it didn't get the sanction that it deserved. So, you know, I know we're consistently under the criticism of being inconsistent, but what we've got to do is take a leaf out of the book of those colleagues that are at the top that are dealing with the excessive force challenges. Whilst we can't copy them 100%, I think 99% of the time we're going to be close, and we can.
Do you think the laws of the game should be changed to distinguish an instant dismissal, i.e. two-footed, reckless? I mean, it's kind of in a roundabout way already there, but it's not in black and white in the way that a player would be able to take it on board.
Right, OK. Education
does that make
of
sense?
Players. Yeah, it does make sense. Education of players is part our responsibility. The clubs have a responsibility to help educate the players by, you know, introducing and saying, hey, you know, this isn't acceptable. Don't do that. You're not allowed, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I think when the I can't remember the actual wording. It's been a few years now. I think that the wording used to be it was deliberate or intent. I think the word was intent in the law. Was his challenge intent and a penal infringement? Now they defined it under careless, reckless and excessive. Now, the reason that careless was introduced, because a player would turn around and say, oh, but referee, I didn't mean it. OK, you didn't mean it, but nonetheless, it's careless, so we're going to penalise you for doing that, so don't do it again. And then the more reckless challenges, you could go back to the word intent. They are intent, you know, and that was it. And then obviously excessive force was the, those challenges that were a little bit of extra beef involved. That's really how it came about. I do think the laws at the moment are quite easy to understand. The interpretation of referees has got to become a little bit tighter than what it currently is, right across the board. It's as simple as that, in my view.
The download is complete.